Protestants, the Catholics, the Jews, they would all have thought differently, but they've recognized there was a creator or a God that gave them the rights. Would you acknowledge that, or you don't believe that's true?
Oh, I agree. I agree. I agree that that was the better part of their consciousness at that time.
Right.
That is correct. And it's embodied in our currency. It's embodied on memorials and throughout the halls of our government. We can find the footprints of that belief in that principle throughout. The question is, in the daily practices of our lives, how far away from those principles have we evolved? And have we gotten to such a point that we're no longer realistic to the world around us? We have become we're more concerned about how we can survive as a consuming nation rather than a giving nation, a producing nation.
You're absolutely right. We've lost our vision of God, and we've become simply people who want material things rather than realizing, of course, that all of our freedom and the benefits that we have as human beings come from God, not from the material acquisitions that we make.
Well, and now we're seeing the consequences to that drift, to that evolution. The pendulum has swung too far, and now it's got to come back to a more equitable balance. And in doing so, those that have, shall we say, drifted or pursued too far in one direction are going to suffer the consequences of that. Those that are more imbalanced will suffer less. Those who tend to be more greedy and self-indulgent in our society will be often the ones that suffer the most. We can see that in the cars, the vehicles that we drive. Those people who are, driving around in $40,000, $50,000 SUVs are suddenly abandoning them, and those that can afford to switch cars into a more economic situation are doing so. We see a change in how we eat, how we consume food. This is a quantum shift that we're witnessing here, to come back to a more equitable balance of behavior and of perception of ourselves and of each other. And this is good. As if we back away from the forest for the trees, what is sorrowful, and I'm not using the word bad or good, but what is sorrowful is the unnecessary suffering which inevitably will take place by those who, shall we say, been the most foolish, if you will. And for those of us who would like to think we have something to offer for the tomorrow, for the citizens of tomorrow, we must dust off some of the principles of yesterday, be they constitutional, be they, shall we say, spiritual, or shall we say, a more accountable relationship with our environment. Those things are the things that will carry us forth and will protect us and will give us the ability to survive in the tomorrow. Continued pursuit of what we can extrapolate from the system in terms of benefits and privileges will cause us to become more desperate, more fearful, more brittle, if you will, as a people. And so what we're witnessing here in our age, all within a decade or two.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Back to just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Eli Mellor. Go right ahead, Eli.
Well, as I was saying, things have to be, when they get too far out of whack, shall we say, no matter whether it's the cars that we drive, the engines that that motorize them, whether it's the practices of medicine or education, there always has to be a correction. Whether it's a stock, it continues to go up. Gold today went up $100 an ounce. It may go up another $100 an ounce tomorrow. But sooner or later, it's going to exhaust itself, and it's going to drift back, and that's called a correction, to come to a more equitable balance. That's true in virtually everything, in all mankind's pursuits. Does the correction cause a crash? Are there people that get permanently injured in the way of that correction? Yes. And there are people that are getting lives and families that are getting very seriously hurt, especially if we look at home ownership. There's hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people that are being separated from their security, that are being put in virtually in many cases on the streets, who have are the results of shall we say, the system extending itself too far in this world, this panacea world of benefits and privileges, and that there's always going to be a bigger chicken and a better meal on the plate tomorrow. Where does freedom come from? Freedom, I like to think of, is a fruit. It's the result of a lot of things. It's the result of planting the tree correctly in the right place, in the right environment, nurturing it, pruning it, being patient, waiting for it to mature, and understanding what a good apple or a good orange, a good fruit is, and knowing when to harvest it and what to do with it once you harvest it. And the pleasure of eating the fruit is otherwise known as freedom.
But of course, there's really no place in the world where freedom really exists. We probably had more freedom in the United States, imperfect as it was, during the early years of our government, than any other time throughout history, except of course, during the time when the children of Israel lived without rulers, simply under the we described in 2 Samuel.
Indeed, I agree. Then certainly we do now. Because every year we feel it's important to legislate more rules and regulations, that the answer to protecting freedom lies in more rules and regulations, more laws. I mean, we incarcerate more people per capita in this country than any other country
in the world. Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Eli Mellor. Eli, do you have a web page you'd like to get out there?
Well, yes, a website that we created a number of years ago. It's under remodel, so we ask for people's patience while we complete it. But it's thetimeisnow.us. That's thetimeisnow.us. And on that page, there will be three or four things that I might bring the attention of your viewers that they could see or potentially have value in reading. The first manuscript that I published in 1979 and the second and the third are all on the website, the last one being the actual home page of the website. And also there are 12 good reasons why the time is now that I authored in 1997 that I believe are still true and hold, shall we say, the keys to the areas that we need to probe and look at in our society and understand how we can improve in maintaining the principles to keep those 12 things intact, to correct them, to bring them back to some aspect of normalcy. It's well visited by at least 50 or more countries around the world every month. It reflects the best essence of what I've tried to contribute to those that I love and I care about and throughout the world and in our country for the last 30 years. And I stand by those words. And looking back upon what I've written and what I've said, I would only modify maybe a half a dozen words in each manuscript after some 10, 20, and 30 years looking back. So.
Well, of course, the founding fathers of the United States were really very wise men. And they knew what had happened in ancient Greece, where, of course, they'd tried to form a democracy, an idealistic society, but they found that people were always more interested in benefiting themselves. They'd always vote for the politicians who promised to give them the most and ended up voting themselves into tyranny. The same thing had happened in ancient Rome. People, if they were given the opportunity to vote and do what they wanted to, would always be looking after their own self-interest, and that is why, certainly, the founding fathers of our country wanted to limit the power of the government over the lives of the people so the people could succeed or fail as they wanted to, but it was up to them And, of course, the hope was, of course, that the people would be altruistic enough because they had a belief in God. In fact, it was James Madison who said, our form of society was made only for a moral and religious people. It would not work for any other. And I think he's absolutely right. Unless you have moral and religious people who have a standard and a fear of God, why, of course, the society is going to fail. But, of course, you would not necessarily agree with that.
No, that's not true. I happen to agree with that.
But of course, it's a religious people, moral and religious people, what he said.
Well, I'm not going to enter the debate on the value of being religious, but morality speaks of a sense of accountability for themselves as well as for their neighbors, as well as for their families. They understand that some kind of moral code is essentially required in order to stay on the road and not to drift into bestiality, if you will.
But, of course, who determines what that moral code is? I mean, some people want to love their neighbors, and other people want to eat their neighbors. I mean, which one should we embrace? I mean, they're actually different ideas. If there are no absolutes and no standards, who determines whether we should love our neighbors or eat our neighbors?
Well, Moses tried to do that with the Ten Commandments and profoundly set some words into motion that have carried through for virtually many centuries.
But, of course, they've been outlawed here in America today. They're not allowed to be posted in any public building. They were pretty good ideas, but we're not allowed to use them today in America.
Well, and the reason is that the status quo, the corporate structure, the privileged society would prefer to have people dependent upon benefits and privileges because they create more tax revenue that way. Accountable people, families that are able to provide by one breadwinner rather than three or four just to keep the family alive, generates less in taxes when you're taxing labor. Allowing women to pursue equal authority, so-called equal authority in the workplace, in the earning place as men, the subterfuge, the false message is they create more taxes that way for governments. It's obvious. Whereas if a man was able to provide for a family of four and the other three were able to stay at home and enjoy the home and protect the home and preserve the marriage unit, if you will, from that concept, not only would there be less divorce, but there would be, you know, one quarter less taxes, especially if you're dependent upon the taxes being generated by labor. And you say, well, who determines the morality? I suggest that we consider what I said earlier, something along the lines, thou shalt care or suffer the consequences. And what do I mean there? I didn't say pay the consequences. It's not a punishment thing for a right or wrong or a bad or good or a black and white. It's the law of a closed system. For every action, there's an equal reaction. If I'm a gluttonous consumer, whether it be of alcohol or whether it be of gasoline or whether it be of candy bars or whether it be of women or any other vices or whether it be of anything, it doesn't make any difference, there will be consequences that will be suffered by one or more people as a result of that behavior. It's a law of nature. We just need to stand back a little bit from the forest to see that. It's true everywhere we go. If we believe that we have an unbridled right to purchase and manufacture grandiose automobiles that get 10 miles to a gallon and that have wheel assemblies that cost $4,000 or $5,000. Well, yes, we have a right to do that. We can do anything in the universe that we wish to do. The question is, what are the consequences? And to what extent, as individuals or as a society or groups within the society, care about the consequences? How much do the consequences cost to unbridled consumption of alcohol or drugs or careless education? What are the consequences? What are the consequences of creating a fiction wedding, all right, called a marriage through a marriage license, entitling people to have the right to get a divorce for virtually any reason that they want? What are the consequences? What are the consequences to Roe versus Wade? We're intelligent enough. We have the information. We have the data. We're ignoring the consequences. We're ignoring the data for political reasons. We continue to prefer to pursue a path of self-indulgence. And those of us that do, those of us who continue to do that, will suffer the consequences. The consequences may be more taxes, may be less quality education, may be diluted sermons on Sunday morning in churches. It may be a variety of things.
All right, well, we have a Jeannie calling here. I think it's Jeannie has a question.
And
is this Jeannie?
A lot of things that currently require money or politics or legislation to provide solutions, believing that mandates are the way to go, will just evaporate. They won't be required anymore. You reach out and you give to another individual on an individual level. You don't need a license of privilege to do that. You don't need permission from someone else to learn something in the universe. You just do so because you care.
All right, fine. Well, let's see what Jeannie is calling in here. Jeannie, do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I do. I'm hearing very generalized talk, and I'm very interested if your guest could tell if we were living in a community of his type, how would that community be structured, and how would we live in that community as an individual? I'm very curious about the structure of that community he's talking about.
I think this is very similar to what Robert Owens established back in 1820 in New Harmony, Indiana. But Jeannie wants to know how this society would be structured. Who would be in charge of this society?
Well, I don't think the important question is about who would be in charge.
All right, well, then
who would be in charge? The individual would first of all have an interest of perfecting the individual from a closer resembling of a Buddhistic path, if you will.
In other words, you're suggesting a Buddhistic type then of society?
Well, a Buddhistic approach, realizing that it's the individual that is the closed system, and it's the individual that is ultimately responsible, not the government, not someone else that's going to bail them out or cover their behind if they fall through the net or such. The bottom line is nobody's going to come to our rescue. Nobody's going to care for us unless we care for ourselves. And so from that comes a more simplistic way of living, of relating to each other, rather than keeping up with the Joneses, rather than using houses or using homes as houses, as investment vehicles to make money from, for example, looking at the use of real property for the preservation and foundation of protecting our family, rather than as an economic unit, if you will. Coming to the conclusion, for example, that taxing labor is emanates from Babylon, and it's the one of two primary ways we're taxed, and all societies are, through either unlawful behavior or by greed. And in capitalism in this country, ownership is the definition of that.
Okay, I think you're going away from my question. As a woman, and I have a family, are there going to be regular families with a husband and wife and children? And what are my duties as a female in this community? Even the tribes have tribal chiefs and so forth. There is a structure, and I'm hearing a very vague, I really can't wrap around what you're saying. I wish you would be more definitive.
Are you expecting me to be more definitive as to what the role of the woman, as I see, should be?
Yeah, the role of the woman, of course, she's asking, there's got to be, somebody's got to be in charge. And in every society, throughout all history, there's been somebody who's been in charge. There's a tribal chief, there's the king, the ruler, the emperor, there's always the president, the dictator, there's always somebody in charge, except in America, where, of course, we limited the power of government so men could be free. But the society you're really describing, I'm not quite certain, other than people should be caring. But unfortunately, mankind is not caring. That's the trouble. That mankind could be terribly cruel and inhuman to other human beings.
The question that your call-in is asking here is an extremely important one, and I'm going to do my best to try to address it, so bear with me. I think ultimately that a more satisfactory arrangement for social order relies in the ability to respect certain people rather than asking the question about who's going to be in charge. Because that question provokes that which, from a child, who do I listen to, my father or my mother? Who's in charge? The ultimate answer to that is you're in charge. If we believe that all men are created equal, then we all have the ability to have choice, to make choices in our lives. And having that ability, we must be people enough to realize that we are going to either enjoy the fruits of those choices or the consequences to those choices.
Are there going to be families?
The solution doesn't involve...
Excuse me, sir.
Sure.
Are there going to be families as a unit in these communities? I'm thinking this is more like a commune where
Haven't really explained to me the structure.
Jeannie, let him explain. What he basically wants is a society where everybody is caring and always does the right thing or does the right thing.
I don't like the word right, but the caring thing. First of all, I have a deep reverence and respect for the family unit. Encourages the disintegration or the separation or the breakup of the family, generally speaking, I'm against.
But of course, you don't really like that term right, because that seems to suggest that there's some absolute right and wrong. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, it also ultimately results in your perception of what is right versus what my perception of right is.
And of course,
that sets us up for both. That sets both of us up for failure.
But do you not believe that there is an absolute right and an absolute wrong? In other words, as the analogy I gave before, some people want to love their neighbors, some people want to eat their neighbors. Which one would you advocate? I mean, you know, some people think it's perfectly all right to eat their neighbors. Some people think it's perfectly all right to kill Jews. I believe that there are absolute rights and absolute wrongs. And once we abandon that, we lay ourselves open for social anarchy, which is what we have today. But you would disagree with that.
Well, I think the word right and wrong sets us up for anarchy.
All right, Jeannie, do you have another question before we let you go?
Well, what it sounds like is, you know, I've gone to international conferences, and I've heard people talk about this in the State of the World Forum and the United Nations, and it sounds very similar to what they want to create are these sustainable planned villages where everyone goes out. And land is common owned, and you go to the tool shed and you work out in the fields, and there will be no private property. And I've heard this in the international conference.
Well, let's just ask our guest, Eli, do you believe in the right of private property, the inherent right of private property?
Not the way that it's exercised.
In other words, you don't believe in the right of private property. Do you think we should share our property then? And share our labor and work for the common good. I mean,
accountable and caring kind of way.
And
if we take responsibility for ownership, it turns out that that is an immense responsibility, And I believe that we're taking that far too much for granted.
Oh, well, I think, Jeannie, that answers your question, that Eli doesn't really believe in the right of private property. Would that be a fair statement, Eli?
No, it would not.
Oh, it wouldn't be? So you think that people should have the right then to own property?
Yes, I think they should have the right to own property. But with that, I'm pointing out, comes a tremendous responsibility.
Well, of course. But, of course, anything in life has a responsibility.
Indeed.
Hang on there, Gene. We'll be back in just a moment with Eli. And if you have any other questions. All right, Eli. Jeannie, do you have one more question before I let you go?
Well, I do, and I listen to the Board of Supervisors in Santa Cruz County. And my district supervisor, Ellen Perry, I have it documented and on film. She says, I believe in private property to a certain extent. And this is what I hear this evening. And if you listen to our Founding Fathers, which he has brought up many, many times, you will know the quotes that private property and freedom are inseparable.
Okay, fine. We're just about out of time, okay. Jeannie, but God bless you. And thanks very much for bringing that up. And, of course, how do you feel about that, this idea that private property and freedom are inseparable? Or do you say that, really, of course, that private property brings tremendous responsibility? Or do you think that private property is the very essence of our freedom?
Well, I don't think it's the very essence. I think it's certainly a cornerstone of capitalism.
And do you believe in capitalism, then?
I believe in responsible capitalism, and I happen to believe that the capitalism that we have evolved into is set for a major, major correction, a major redistribution, if you will, of consciousness. The capitalism that's currently at play in our society cannot survive into the future. It has to metamorphize into something that is far more accountable, far more related to the consequences of the consequences to the pursuit of greed alone, and that it has to be reconciled with the environment, with our neighbors, with how we work and how we provide for ourselves, than the self-centered pursuit and the taxation of the same that currently exists.
Well, I believe in individual freedom. I don't believe in capitalism. I believe freedom under God is the answer to a better society. I guess you and I would disagree on that. You have 1 minute to wrap up the program.
Well, I can only say that the bottom line, after all things are pruned down, is our capacity, whether we're rich or whether we're poor, whether we're a doctor or whether we're a candlestick maker, caring for animals, caring for our environment, caring for each other, caring for our children, caring for our families. To the extent that they are, we will find protection. We will find sanctuary. To the extent that it isn't, we will end up consequences.
All right, Eli. Yeah, Eli, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your expressing your opinion. And I think that I agree with you that we're in real trouble. I believe we're in real trouble because we've turned our back on God. You don't believe that. But, of course, that's what makes talk radio interesting.
That's not true. I dare to differ with you. I hope that you don't end this show with that conclusion. That is not correct.
But do you believe in God, then?
I believe that God is the truth and not a personage. I believe in the truth.
And you believe that then God does establish absolute values, right and wrong?
The values are in the truth.
But they're not in God.
God is not a person.
All right. All right. Well, thank you so very much. Appreciate your being with us. And, of course, our guest this evening has been Eli Meller. And of course, this is the essence of really what so much of what we talk about. There either is a God or there's not a God. Either we're answerable to that God, and, of course, we live our lives accordingly, and we fear God, we love God, because God certainly loves us, but unfortunately he punishes us when we do the wrong thing. And when you remove this concept that we are responsible to God for what we do, you end up with moral anarchy, which is what we have today. And what people have to understand is that Christianity is under attack today. That's why they took God and prayer out of our schools. That is why we have 60 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease. We can't even post the Ten Commandments on the walls of our classrooms in our schools today. Why? Because there's a conspiracy against God. And there are a lot of people out there, they just don't understand the very essence of our freedom. Our freedoms come from God. Our form of government was made for moral and religious people. And as Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, when asked, why did Russia go communist? He said, because our people forgot God. And, of course, I believe that Christianity is the true religion. And I believe that we can only understand what's going on today by understanding the scriptures. And we can only anticipate what the future holds by reading prophecy. You may disagree with me, but then you're going to have to give us a call sometime when we have open lines. I'd love to hear what you have to say. There are a lot of idealistic people out there. But in the final analysis, why, of course, we can look and see what's worked through the years. We can look and see why America was once the greatest nation in the world and where we lost our way. And where we lost our way, of course, was when the Masons took control of the United States Supreme Court in 1941 and controlled it for 30 years in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1. And if you doubt that, you can go up on the Internet and just type in Masons, United States Supreme Court, and you'll find what I say is true. If you want other documentation, we give it to you. This is why you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Why you need to hear our talk on the forbidden secret and get the syllabus that goes with that. And, of course, the supplement to that is the talk called The Secret Knowledge. Why you need to get my talk on the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that. And, of course, if you specifically request, we'll be glad to send you the Luciferian pamphlet, The Working of the Spiritual Hierarchy. It's put out by the Luciferian organization, the Lucis Trust. And you can go to their website, lucistrust.org. You can go to their front organizations, the World Group of World Servers, I think it, or New Group of World Servers, something like that. Some of the richest men and most powerful foundations in the country support the front groups for the Lucis Trust. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, and most people don't even know what's going on. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and we do hope that you go there, that you'll get the information. You'll come to understand the true nature of what this battle is really all about. If you want to get more into the background of the Supreme Court and the Masonic influence on the Supreme Court, the books would be The Unholy Alliance and Behind the Lodge Door. That's Paul Fisher's Behind the Lodge Door and James Wardner, The Unholy Alliance. I think we only have about 11. When they're gone, they're gone. It'll never be reprinted. And ladies and gentlemen, understand what this is about. Remember our all-day conference. It's going to be on the 26th of October. We're bringing in speakers from across America. And, of course, we hope you can come. We're serving lunch. And of course, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. America is under attack today. And there are people out there, perhaps very good people, who do not understand the essence of America or why we're losing our freedom. So please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.